Good afternoon. Last time, we started by talking about our second alternative to threads, which was message passing. So this was where we actually wanted to take advantage of, say, having multiple cores or multiple physical machines, but we didn't want to actually share data in memory and deal with all the complications of locks and condition variables and so on. So another model for programming in that is to have these explicit send and receive messages to and from different processes. And, you know, that might be a better alternative for many real cases, and it notably has the advantage that you can run the program on actual separate physical machines and get speed up, whereas that's pretty hard to do if you're trying to share memory across different machines. Then we started talking about virtual memory. We introduced single-level page tables, this idea that we had this translation from virtual addresses, that's addresses programs know about, to machine addresses or physical addresses. And the way we did this is we divided up our memory into these fixed-size pages, which happen to be a power of two. Power of two, so figuring out which page something was in from the address was really simple. And we have this table just saying, for all the pages in the program addresses, what is the corresponding page in the machine addresses, called our page table. And when we looked at that, we discovered that, well, that's a nice idea, but it's a little unwieldy for our real machines, even our 32-bit real machines. So we wanted to have a structure that could store it more compactly. And the way we decided to do that was to use this tree-like structure, this very wide tree, where we had a first level of our tree, which had pointers to a second level for our 32-bit x86. And we used the first part of the virtual page number to look up in the first level, and the second part to look up in the second level. And the advantage of this is that when we had whole second level nodes, which would be all just listed as there's no valid page for this, we could just omit that whole node. And for many programs, we had these big regions of inaccessible memory, and not storing those mappings is going to save us a lot of space. So before I move on and talk more about virtual memory, any questions about what we covered last time? Yes. Question is, how does the page offset affect where the data is? So remember, we have our virtual addresses that map somehow to physical addresses, and we do this in units of pages. So we'll take some page here, and we'll map to some page in the physical memory. And within that, we have like parts near the beginning and near the end. So we have like here versus here, and that maps to like the same locations in the physical memory. The page offset is just saying, which of those are you? Where are you along that? Other questions? Yeah.
I'm looking at a quick question. Why doesn't giving message passing require less copying of data?
Question is, why doesn't using less message passing require less copying of data? So, how do you think the send and receive calls are implemented if they don't share memory, that you probably need to copy the data from one program's memory to the other to implement the sender-receive call? But in a multi-threaded program, we end up just having them access the same actual memory. Like when you did the life assignment, most of you had one copy of the grid that multiple threads accessed, even when they were accessing overlapping pieces. In our message passing strategy for life, we had to send a copy of that last row from one process to another. Other questions?
Yeah. Say that last part about the shared. Because I was watching the lecture again, the one where you have like process A, B, and C, and you were doing like the life assignment.
So, with the life assignment, our strategy was, like, if we split up the grid into three pieces, let's say we were in process B here, then process B is going to receive a message with the little sliver of the grid from above and below. And with respect to my talking about copying, these are sent with send, and send's going to have to copy them from process A and C to B.
So it's more copying?
So it's more copying. Whereas in our multi-threaded implementation, you just read that data directly. Other questions? Yeah.
This is about midterms and finals. Is that okay?
You can ask, yeah.
Okay. Generally, is there a curve on the midterm and final?
I do any adjustments from raw grades to letter grades at the end of the semester.
Okay.
Okay, so when we left off last time, we were looking at what real 32-bit x86 page tables look like, page table entries look like. We mentioned that we had this nice trick that they've designed them so that all the flag information, like the valid bit, is it writable, is it readable, is it kernel mode accessible, and so on, are in the place where, if it were a physical address, the page offset would be. And this means that we can take those, what we'll call flag bits, and OR them with the starting address of a physical page, and now we have a page table entry we can put in some page table. And we'll take advantage of this a lot in XV6's code to manipulate page tables. So we'll see that for constructing page tables. So we can construct a page table by, if we have our page table, we can get a pointer to it. Then we can access it at some index and make a page table entry by ORing the flags and the base address that we want that page table entry to refer to. So here I'm setting the present, writable, and user mode accessible flags in a new page table entry and storing it at index specified where I have a pointer to the page table that is presumably for some process I want to run. So another thing that we have is we have these macros here, and these can be used to help disassemble or look at page tables. So here I have a function which, given a process and a virtual address, it outputs the top-level page table entry corresponding to that virtual address. So the way I do that is I first grab the top-level page table from the struct proc. So it's called pagedir. That's just a pointer to the first-level page table for that process. And then I compute the index, and there's a PDX macro in XV6 for this. This is just taking the top 10 bits of the address. There's also a PTX for taking the next 10 bits. PDX for page directory index. So we retrieve that element of the array that is our page table. And then it's a number. And we can look up whether it's valid, present, writable, or user accessible by looking for the particular bit being set. So the present bit is the valid bit. We AND with that to get 0 if it's not set, and the present bit if it is. We also have the writable bit. If we AND with it, we either get the writable bit out or 0 if the writable bit's not set. So we can use this to query what bits are set in a page table entry. And we also have this macro which extracts the base address, and it just does that by ending with something with all the flag bits not set. So it removes the present and writable bit so we can print out just the address part. Okay. So any questions about how this works? Yeah.
Where does 10 bits come from?
Why is it 10 bits? So It was 10 bits because, do I have it here? No, I don't. Okay. Because when we split up our address, we split it up. We had our page offset, which was 12 bits. And then we had 22 bits left over for our virtual page number. And we split that up, or not 20, 20 bits left over, because 20 plus 12 is 32. And we split that up evenly, just the way the Intel designers decided to do this, into two 10-bit pieces. And the first 10-bit piece is used for the first level, second 10-bit piece is used for the second level. So that's why we chose 10 to get that first level index. Other questions? Okay, so now that we've seen sort of the basics of manipulating page table entries, I'm going to walk you through the utility functions in XE6 that access page tables, partly because we have an assignment after the midterm where you're going to use them, and partly because it will show you, give you hopefully a better grasp of how working with page tables works. So we have a whole bunch of functions. So we have a function for allocating pages. So there's kalloc and kfree, and these allocate whole physical pages. This is the only dynamic memory allocation in the XV6 kernel. It doesn't specify a size, it just gives you a page. If you didn't want a page, when it's less or more, too bad, that's all you have to work with. You have to build it, build what you want from that. Okay. So then we have a function walkPageDir. So walkPageDir takes a top first level page table from a process, for example, and traverses it to get a pointer to the corresponding second level page table entry. So if you want to make a particular virtual address point to something, you call this to get a pointer to that page table entry in the second level table, and then you adjust that page table entry to point where you want. And of course, that's doing that manually for each page is a little inconvenient. So there's a utility function called metPages, which is just a loop that gets a second level page table entry and sets it to something. And we need to do this in pretty standard ways a bunch of times. So one example is when we make a new process. If you remember, in XV6, we had our programmed memory. We had the so the kernel part of memory up here, and then we had the user part. So one thing we need to do is we need to set up all this kernel part of memory in a new page table. Because even though we have a bunch of processes with their own page table, we make the kernel part of that page table, the top half of it, the same in all processes, so we can access things from our exception handlers in the same memory location every time. So there's a function called allocKVM, which sets up all those entries and creates a new page table. And then there's a function called allocUVM, which, after you've done that, actually allocates some space for the program. So we can load a program into some memory that has convenient addresses that the program is allowed to use. You remember our policy was that those addresses that were above 8000000 were only to be used in the kernel. That's not where the user stack is. That's not where the user jumps to, and so on. That's all in other memory. So allocUVM sets up that other memory. So questions about these functions from a high level, what they do? Question is, when does allocKVM get called? AllocKVM is the function which creates a new set of page tables. So when we create a new process, like with fork, we use allocKVM to start creating that new page table. And also, when we're booting the system, we want to create the first process, we do it with allocKVM. Yeah?
So when do we call kalloc as opposed to that?
Question is, when do we call kalloc? Anytime we need a new page. So a whole bunch of these functions are going to call it. So allocKVM is going to call kalloc to allocate space for the phage table. And alloc UVM is going to call kalloc allocate space for the user to access. And it turns out that walk page dir is sometimes going to call kalloc to allocate a second level page table, which we'll see in a bit. So there's a whole bunch of places where we need memory. Kalloc is our function we access, kind of like malloc, but it's less flexible than malloc. Okay, other questions? Okay, so let's look at walk page dir. It's probably the most useful of these. So I have the partial code for walk page dir and sort of a walkthrough of how it's traversing our paging related data structures. And what this function does is it takes a first level page table pointer, this page dir, and an address, a virtual address. And also it has this flag here. This is an int, not a Boolean, just because C doesn't support Booleans very well. If this is 0, then it returns a null if there's no second level page table for that address. If it's 1, it instead allocates a new second level page table if there isn't already one. So like we start out with an empty page table, empty first level page table, which is all invalid. We have to allocate a new second level table to write to it. If you set alloc to 1, it will do that. So the first thing it does is it gets a pointer to the first level page table entry for this address. Does that by using the page table like an array and accessing it at the index with that PDX macro, which remember is that top 10 bits of the virtual address. So we got this pointer PDE, which points to the first level page table entry in the array. Then we check if it's valid. And I'm going to first talk about the case where it is already valid. So we have the first level page table entry says, yes, there's a second level table for this address. It's not one of those big holes, we haven't filled it. And if so, we retrieve a pointer to the second level page table. And I'll talk about how this works in a bit. But retrieve a location of the second level page table, which later on we're going to do the same type of indexing we did to get the first level page table entry to get the second level one. But instead of using the first 10 bits of the address, we'll use the second 10 bits. And when we're retrieving a pointer to that page table, we first get the physical address from the page table. And then we use this special P2V macro to convert it to a virtual address. Remember when I talked last time, this is converting it to a virtual address because we know we've mapped address 0 to 8000000 and so on. So it's just adding that constant to the physical address to make it a virtual address we can access in the kernel. It's not caring about the page table. We just know that we have a mapping in our kernel page tables where if this is our virtual addresses, that we have the upper half map 1-to-1 to consecutive addresses, and that's what this P2V function is doing. So we start out with an address like here, and this adds the constant for where our kernel memory starts, because we know the kernel memory starts at 0 physical and goes off. Yes? So the question is, instead of paying P2V, could we just add that constant? Yes. We could do that. Yes? Question, is this is never going to be called in user memory? Yes. We do not allow user programs to access their own page tables. And there's one reason why we don't do that is because then they could like write to the kernel's code and change it. So if there's anything we want to prevent user programs from doing, we can't do it if we let them write their own page table. Yeah?
So the mapping from physical to virtual is different from like using using the second 10 bits to access the pointer and the page table?
The question, the mapping from physical to virtual?
Virtual to physical, yeah.
So, which way? Virtual, from virtual to physical? So this function is doing, is what we do to figure out the virtual to physical mapping for an address, for any address. So I guess what's confusing is that the P to V and V to P functions, these only work with kernel virtual addresses. So the kernel is set up to have a very simple scheme for choosing its virtual addresses versus physical addresses. But that's not generally true. So these V2P and P2V functions only work for the kernel space because they're relying on that simple mapping. But that's not what we're going to do for like the user stack. We're not going to, the user stack's not going to be at the same memory location every time. But the XP6 kernel, we've chosen that different parts of the kernel at the same memory location every time. Does that make sense? Okay. Other questions? Okay. And then retrieve the second level pointer. So the common case is that we have this funny where we need to get the physical address, and then because we want to read from that second level page table, we need to get a virtual address for it, and that's what the P2V macro does for us in the kernel. It gives us a virtual address that we can access that at. Now, we have this special case here where if there's no second level table yet, like maybe we just started out with an empty table and we need to fill it in, how do we allocate it? So let me show you the code there. So the first part is where we call kalloc. So this is, this funny line of C is just a very compact way of writing return null if the alloc flag is false, meaning we're not trying to make a new second level table, but if we are, set the page table pointer to be newly allocated memory and also return null if that fails. Like we're out of memory. Then after we allocate that memory, we want to make sure that the page table has the newly allocated second level page table has some known data, so we just set it to all zeros. What we really need to make sure is that all the present or valid bits are zero, so we don't accidentally allocate some memory for the program. We only want to do that intentionally. And once we've allocated the second level page table, we need to adjust our first level page table to point to it. So that's what we're doing here, is we're creating a page table entry. And we're using V2P to convert a kernel VA to physical address. Remember, this only works for a kernel virtual address, but that's what kalloc returns. It returns an address for the kernel region. So we can get the physical address for what we just allocated and OR it with the flags, and we just set the flags as present, writable, and user mode always. And you might say, what if I don't want the user to access this? Well, our solution is we can override this in the next level table. Because remember, the processor is going to check the flags each level as it goes through the page tables. So XV6's choice is that all the flags which matter, they set in the second level table, and they just have everything enabled in the first level table. Or like writable and present, and writable in user mode, and those permission flags. Okay. So, any questions about this? Okay. So that's our get a page table entry pointer to a page table entry function. And then we have map pages, which is for setting a range of page table entries. And map pages is just a loop which calls walk pager to get a pointer to a page table entry and then assigns to that pointer. So map pages takes a starting virtual address, a starting physical address, and a size, and some permission bits, which can be like writable and so on. And it is a loop where it sets A to be start at that virtual address and increment up until plus size, and also increments the physical address the same amount. So for each of those virtual addresses and the corresponding physical address, just incrementing in the range, it looks up the page table entry. If it can't get it, it returns an error. The reason it couldn't get it is because we'd run out of memory. We need to allocate a second level page table, and there was no space. Then it has this check to see, is that page table entry, that second level page table entry, already set to something? And this is a sanity check, because XV6 has this policy that it only sets page table entries once. I'm mentioning this here because we'll have an upcoming homework where that's not going to be true anymore. But as in XV6 as it exists, once you set a page table entry for a process, you don't change it to something else that's also valid. So that's why they have this check here, just to see if they made an error. So after they check that it's not already set, they set it to the physical address, which they're going through that range, and also its permissions. And since they're going through this whole range of pages, this will set like a range of addresses. You might imagine using this to set up that initial mapping for the kernel. In fact, it is, where we have address at 8000000 maps to 0, and consecutively after that. So we just make a bunch of call to map pages to set that up. So questions about what this function does? Highlight the most important line. OK. And from that, we have functions that actually construct our user page tables. So these alloc-KVM and alloc-UVM, and these are most notably used as part of exec. So what exec does is it creates a new page table, and we're going to discard the old one for the previous the process this is, and replace it with a new one. So it creates a new page table by calling setup-KVM. And then it's going to allocate memory for the newly loaded executable, and then we're going to load into that newly allocated memory from disk, and then we're going to create memory for the stack in the heap. So this is our process. We're starting a new process. So I'll start with step one, which is creating the kernel mapping. So we need to have this there, so when we switch to this new page table and we have an exception, the kernel can do its thing. So we need to have all the kernel memory set up in every single process. And the way we do this in XV6 is this setup-KVM function, which allocates the first level page table. So this is where we get a page table to begin with, initializes it, and then iterates through this hard-coded list of the mappings for kernel space. Now you might say, why didn't they just hard-code map pages from that constant kern base 0 to something? And the reason they didn't do that is that it turns out they need different flag bits for different parts of this, and there's actually different pieces of physical memory they want mapped, and some they don't. So there's a table they have, they just read that table and call map pages for every entry in the table. So all the flags are correct, but it's just setting up that one-to-one mapping. And if it fails, this function calls this freeVM function, and that just frees everything. Which is an annoying thing you have to deal with in the kernel, is what if I run out of memory during every single possible point? I can't just crash. Okay, so once we've created kernel mappings, we need to allocate memory for the executable. And one problem with this is we need to figure out, well, how do we know how much to allocate? And to do that, we actually need to get some information from the executable. And the way this works on XV6 is that the executables contain a list of what needs to be loaded. And this list is an array of these, this struct here. And the important parts are this struct, this array of structs contains a virtual address and a size of things that need to be loaded. So there's a loop in the XV6 kernel that looks at these structs from the executable file. So it just loads them from disk, looks at them, and says, OK, I need to allocate space, space in the page table for going up to this address. So it computes the address at the end of this section and allocates that much space. And as it's doing this, it's keeping track of SC, which is the top of the heap, where the heap is going to end up starting. So it's keeping track of the top of the program's memory, which will eventually become the top of the program's heap. But what this function does is it just allocates memory, from size up to this second sum, so up to the end of the stuff we have to have loaded. So we're just allocating memory eventually from 0 to the last thing we need to load. Yeah?
So the top of the program memory becomes the top of the heap, like the heap will end there, or like the heap will begin there?
So I'll get to that. So we have another step to actually allocate the stack and set up the heap. But initially, we're going to have address 0, and we're going to have the program. And this is where size is going to be initially. So that our first step is to allocate memory for the program. And our second step here is going to be to load the program into that memory after we've allocated it. Okay. So here's our alloc-UVM function. It's a loop which calls map pages. That's all it is. And it loops from old size to new size, so from between its two arguments. So just out from this range size to this maximum, it allocates the space, and it returns the highest address it set. And when it's allocating, calling map pages, it actually calls map pages one page at a time, even though map pages takes a range. It allocates one page and sends it to map pages as the physical address to map. So each page is allocated separately with kalloc. That becomes part of the memory we load the program into. So we allocate a zero page and add it to the second level page table one at a time. We use map pages instead of getting a page table pointer and setting it manually. And then there's this load UVM function, and that function just copies from disk into that newly allocated memory. So here's what that function looks like. So this is implemented by it takes a page directory, it gets the page table entry for it, and it looks up the physical address from that, then converts that back to a virtual address we can use in the kernel. And then reads from disk into there. Okay. So question, why did they go through this process of looking up a page table entry, extracting the physical address from it, and converting it back to a virtual address when we started with a virtual address? What was the point of doing this whole translation? Yeah. So to make sure the entry is valid is one proposal. So that is something that we are checking, and that we would get an error here. That is not the primary issue with not doing that. But indeed, we are checking that it's valid, and this function will panic if it's not. Something more important. Yeah.
In an actual operating system, you can only actually access things at physical addresses.
Question, in an actual operating system, you can only access things at physical addresses? We can still use our virtual addresses. Right? We eventually use a virtual address. It's just one in the kernel region. But there is something about the virtual address we started out with which is bad, which I think is what you're trying to get at. So I want to think of what's wrong with the virtual address we start out with? Why can't we use it directly? It's nothing about being inside the operating system. So if we go back to what I said we were doing, we're implementing exec. We're creating a new page table. We haven't switched to that process yet. So this virtual address is a virtual address for a process which isn't running. So we can't access it directly because it's not the current page table. That's why this function took in a page directory, which might not be for the current process. In fact, probably won't be for the current process. So this is the first level for a not yet running process. So we can't just access that virtual address directly because it's not our current page table. And when we compute a virtual address with P to V, this is a kernel virtual address that we can access because it's loaded in every program. In the same way. Okay, so questions about this? Okay, so that's why we had to do this indirect thing. Okay, so there. Okay, so I mentioned that kalloc and kfree allocate these whole pages. And there are memory allocation function in the kernel. And I guess I just skipped over. Yeah. And the way they work internally is they just keep a linked list of free pages. You might say, where do they store that linked list? You can't call kalloc to allocate kalloc's linked list. So what they do is they keep it inside the free pages. So pages which aren't allocated just have a linked list node in them instead. And it's just created on boot. So, yeah. So I guess I didn't talk about the other starts of setting up the process. So another thing that we're going to do, so after we load the program up to here, we're going to call allocuvm to allocate this space. And then we're going to set our initial beginning of the heap to here. And we generally represent the extent of our heap with the size variable in the struct proc. So initially, it's going to be empty. So this is the initial value is right after the stack. But as we allocate more heap memory in our programs, that moves that pointer. And also, adjust our page table to add more map pages using the exact same function we'd use when we were loading the program to allocate space. Just calls that allocuvm function I showed you earlier, again, to get another page and increment that size. And there's a system call to do this called sbrk for set break. So basically, you call sbreak of amount, and it basically just increments your size by amount and also adjusts the memory so that's allocated up to there. So here's the implementation of sbreak, the system call. It calls this growproc function with the size. And it returns the old top of the heap. So you can figure out where was the heap before. If you want to know where your top of the heap is now, you call sbreak with 0. And what the growproc function does is it either allocates memory to increment the size by an amount, or it deallocates memory to decrement the size by an amount. So questions? This, yes.
XP6's behavior if you try to use more stack than one page?
question is, what's the x v6 behavior if you're trying to use more stack than one page? If you're lucky, since the stack grows down, you'll access inside this guard page, and this guard page is set non-user right accessible. So if you're lucky, you'll access that, that will trigger an exception, and you'll get an error printed to the console, and your program will be killed. If you're unlucky, you'll skip over that and overwrite your data. And XV6 will happily allow you to do that. If you're really unlucky, you'll skip over that and you'll overwrite your code, and XV6 will also allow you to do that. Okay, other questions? Okay. So, I've talked about sort of normal management of memory. How about what happens when we have problems like accessing memory we're not supposed to? Well, this triggers an exception. And this exception we'll call a page fault. And in XV6, this is handled in one of the default cases in the trap function. So if you access some memory you're not supposed to, that's going to trigger the message in the default case, which actually has some useful information about what happened. So if I, in some user program, access a memory that's not valid, so here I just chose an address that I probably don't have allocated, and I'm writing to it, that triggers a message like this one. And it's written by this code in trap.c that I've shown here. So one thing you can note is that it says we have PID, and the PID, my proc PID, and the name, and we have this trap number, and it's 14. If you look up 14 in traps.h, it's T page fault spelled in a very poor way. And we also have some other useful information. Perhaps the most notable is we have this CR2 value. So there's a special register called CR2. RCR2 stands for read CR2. CR2 means control register 2, very informative name. But for page faults on x86, this contains the address that the program was trying to access that triggered the fault. So at the least, this means that from our error message, we can figure out what memory address was I trying to access. We actually have that information. And another piece of useful information we have is we have this EIP. This is the address of the instruction that was running when the fault happened. Okay. So in XV6, the way they handle this is like what you think of like segmentation faults at. They just kill the program and give you some information about what happened. But that's not the only option we have for handling page faults. In fact, a lot of operating systems handle page faults all the time in some way which is more useful. So one thing you can do is instead of crashing the program, we could just update the page table and return. And returning from a page fault handler will retry the thing that failed. So if you update the page table and return, it's going to do that again. And if you made the page table valid this time, you won't get a page fault anymore. Instead, it will just keep going as if the page fault was the way it was. It was, you know, not a problem. You can think of this doing a just-in-time update of the program's memory, that rather than setting things up in advance, we're just going to wait to figure out what the program actually wants to do, and then we're going to make it work. And this is really useful. We can do these weird tricks, like we can allocate memory for the program only when it's actually needed. We can wait until it's actually needed. We don't have to do it early. And in fact, here's some pseudocode for doing this in XV6, and this is, in fact, the assignment we have after the midterm. So in your trap function, you could say, okay, remember we could get the address that triggered the fault, so we could get that address, and we can use that to look up you know, to set up a page table entry for that address and then return. Just like, and that would be fine. And sort of our rationale here is that we'd get that address and then we check if it's okay, but we check if it's okay by something other than the page table. We'd have some other notion of, is the program allowed to access this address? So in our upcoming assignment, we're going to keep track of the end of the heap. And we're going to say, if it's below there, you can access it, even if I haven't allocated it for you yet. And our rationale is that, okay, you know, that we don't, the page table just says what's currently allocated. That doesn't tell us what we want to allocate if you try to use it. So if the address should be okay, but it's not set up in the page table yet, we'll just set it up in the page table and return. Otherwise, we'll kill you as usual. Like, if you're trying to access the kernel, we'll kill you and say, no, you still can't do that. I'm not going to let you. Some questions about this? So there's just a whole bunch of things we can do by handling page faults. And all of them are going to be about the process can think it has a bunch of stuff in memory, and it doesn't have to be what's actually in their memory. And we can just fix any disagreement when a page fault happens. We just make sure a page fault happens whenever the program would notice any disagreement and fix the disagreement in our page fault handler. And this is really commonly used. So I mentioned allocating space on demand. So you might say, well, if I'm running on, say, Linux, I typically have a stack which is much bigger than a page. I have a huge stack I can use. And often, I don't use it. And you might say, okay, yeah, you know, my typical program, maybe I'm using like 12K of stack space. But we allocate like 8 meg. That seems really wasteful. But we don't have to allocate 8 meg. We can say you have 8 meg of stack space, but only allocate the parts you actually use. And the way we can do that is that we have some instruction that tries to use the stack, like this push here, and it's going to trigger a page fault. Because we look up in our page table, in our second level page table entry, we say, oh, it's not valid. So that triggers a page fault. So the OS says, is that address okay? And we find out, oh, I was supposed to put the stack there. And so it says, okay, yeah, there's supposed to be a stack there. So we'll just update the page table to fix that. Now there's a stack there. Everything's good. Return from the page fault handler, and the processor will rerun that instruction. And this time it will work. It will look in the page table and say, yep, that makes sense, and go on. So questions? This, yeah.
What happens if that same command happens with, like, there's no extra room, like you've reached like the maximum of like the page table size you can give?
So the question is, what happens if I've reached the maximum size, like I can't allocate a physical page to put in there? In that case, I have to decide what I'm going to do. Okay. And one option would be I could kill the program. Another option could be I could kill another program to free up memory. And those are basically the options Linux chooses. A third option could be I could prevent this from happening in advance by keeping track of how much memory I might need and not refusing to allocate start you if I can't allocate that. Okay. Other questions? Okay, so we have this strategy of allocating space on demand. So let's say we're using that. And here I have a little program where I have an array on the stack. And let's say the stack is allocated on demand like that. And there's no compiler trickery. Like, the compiler doesn't say, you're not using most of this array, we'll allocate it. It actually allocates it. How much physical memory gets allocated for the array when I run this function? I'll give you... minute, you can check with your neighbor. Okay, who needs more time? A couple people, okay. Okay, who thinks A, B, C, D, E, F, G, okay, H, I, okay, so we're split between F and G. Someone want to defend F? So it only accesses every 16K, so that's every fourth page. And each iteration of this loop needs to get a whole page, because remember when we had our example here, we allocated a whole page that's 4K. So each iteration allocates a new 4K page. It's a new page because of the first time we're accessing it. And even though we're only accessing one byte of it, we need the whole page for the access to, for that write instruction to work. Okay, so that's what I think is right. And so I guess so I believe that F is the should be the correct answer. Now, you might say, oh, but we're allocating 128K. Shouldn't it happen then? But remember that this allocation here, all it's doing is moving RSP from where RSP points. That doesn't need to use the page table at all. We're just adjusting a pointer. So that doesn't trigger a page fault, and we aren't accessing any addresses in between. We don't have any reason to do that. Yeah?
Could you explain the
32 points again for, like, why it's 32? So why is it 32 times 1024? So we access 16 addresses in here. Did I? Eight addresses in here because I can divide. So this loop executes 8 times because 128 divided by 16 is 8 and not 16. And each of those 8 times is the first time we're accessing a particular virtual page, and we allocate the whole virtual page. So that 8 times 4K is the total amount we allocate, which is 32K. Yes.
Can you say in I equals 0, won't you be accessing RSP then? So you'll have to allocate more?
So the question is, when we say I equals 0, won't you be accessing RSP? Yes, but we also never we're accessing down here, but we never access, like, actually where RSP is, near the pages around the initial value of RSP. Because the compiler is going to subtract first and then access based on where the RSP is, that's going to be the beginning of the array. Yeah? So the compiler, to allocate the stack space, all the compiler needs to do is change where the stack pointer points. It doesn't actually need to write. You might say, oh, to allocate stack space, I push. That is not necessary to allocate stack space. You can just adjust the stack pointer. And for a big array like this, that's definitely what the compiler will do. Right? Because it doesn't make sense to actually, like, write to the stack to set up this array. And And we also have this explicit statement here. So most likely, this array is 128k. So it's most likely going to have a subtract, 128 times 1024 from RSP instruction. Which I'm sure that is kind of readable. Okay. Other questions? Yeah.
How do you know you need a whole page for each?
The question is, why does each 1 byte access need a whole page? That's because the operating system's only options are editing this page table. So all it can do is fill in the entry in this page table, and that's for a whole page. Like, it doesn't have any way of giving the program less than a whole page of memory at a time. Okay, other questions? Okay, so, yeah.
If it wasn't such a big chunk, you'd be accessing the same page multiple times.
So if I changed that index to 1024, then we'd be accessing every page 4 times. And only the first time we accessed each page would we need to allocate it.
Okay, then once you cross that boundary, you'd have to
allocate again. Yeah, the first time we access a page in the scheme, we allocate it. That's what we do. So this is sort of an allocation on demand. Just the first time we access it, we allocate it. This is actually really common in real OSs. And there's a reason why. It makes things faster. So malloc and new are faster because they just return after they update the OS data structures saying you have the space, and we can worry about actually giving you the space later. In particular, this makes starting processes faster, right? We just say you have the space and start running code rather than allocating like a couple megabytes. And the same strategy is using for like loading programs too. So for loading programs, we'll say, this is where it gets loaded from, we'll remember that, and we'll load it when you try to access it. Just like here, we're giving you empty memory, we'll give you memory that comes from disk when you try to access it. And we'll talk a lot more about that later. So our future assignment, one part of it is going to be adding allocation on demand just for the heap in XV6. So S-break is just going to change where the OS thinks your memory ends, but you'll actually allocate that memory from the page fault handler in XV6. That's going to be the first part of the assignment. And the way this would work is you're just going to take advantage of the fact that, well, we already track where the heap ends with this size variable. And rather than having S-break call LQVM to change the page table right away, you'll do that on a page fault. You'll say, was this page fault in the heap? If so, well, that must have meant I just didn't allocate it yet. And you'll allocate it. Okay. Now, in a real OS, we're not going to be able to get away with having just size. We'll talk more about like how do you track this space in a real OS? We don't just have one end of heap variable. Okay, so this was allocation on demand was one page table trick, and we're going to talk about another, and this is for fast copying. And we have a use case for this. This is fork. Remember, fork creates a copy of the entire program, which we usually don't use. And that seemed super slow, but we can speed it up with some other tricks with page tables. And the observation we're going to make is that some stuff we don't need to copy. For example, this code, we don't need to copy. In fact, we can just copy the page table entries and mark them as read-only, and that solves that problem. We're never going to write to the code or the constants, so we can just have them, the two processes, point to the same memory, and there's no problem. It's just as if we copied it, except we're saving space. Now, we'd like to also share the writable data, because it's mostly the same. But the problem is, we might get unlucky, and maybe the program that just called fork bash is going to write right here, and we'll get in trouble if we share those. And that would be a problem. So how do we solve that problem? Well, the observation is it's fine to share until they modify it. So we just need some way to detect when they're going to modify it and then undo the sharing. So we're going to share it, you know, assuming that they're not going to change it. If they actually change it, then we unshare it. We actually make a copy. And we have a mechanism for doing this. Remember, our page tables have this writable flag already. So we just set it as read-only. And when the processor complains, hey, you set this as read-only, and the program tried to write to it, we don't crash the program. We just say, oh, I set that as read-only because I wanted to fake copying it. So this is known as copy on write. So we're going to not actually copy. We're going to share it as read-only. But when the program tries to write to it, we're going to actually make the copy. So the way this would work is we have our program. Here's a part of its page table. It calls fork. And we just make a copy of the page table with both copies set as not writable everywhere. So they share all the memory. We haven't actually allocated any new memory for the program data. We just have both of them pointing to the same thing. And then they're going to write something. So when, say, one of the programs tries to write to a read-only page, we'll copy the page and update only that program's version of the page table entry. So we only end up copying the things that they actually write to. The other stuff, we just have one copy of still between the two, the original process and the fork child. Questions about this? Yeah.
So then if the other program tries to write to the same spot, do you now have three copies of it?
So the question is, what happens if the other program tries to write to the same spot? So if you did the naive thing, you'd have three copies of it. Typically, you're going to, in a real OS, you'll need to, and in our upcoming assignment, it turns out, you'll need to track, you need to track some way of knowing that there's nothing pointing to this anymore. So one way you could do that is you could keep a count of how many processes have each page mapped, each page in its page table, and decrement that count. When it becomes zero, you actually deallocate it. And if you're tracking that count, you can actually avoid doing the copy. You could just say, oh, I got a page fault for this, but this is the only, now this process is the only thing pointing to that. I'll just mark it as writable and return from the page fault. But yes, you need to do some tracking to know how many people still have a pointer to this? And that's going to be an extra data structure we'll need to add to the operating system to implement this well. Yes?
Which one's a copy?
So in this case, the thing we just made writable is a copy. And this was the original. And yeah, if this process writes, we either need to figure out that now it's the only thing with this original version, or we need to make a copy of it, and or we need to make a copy of it and somehow make sure we don't leak memory. Yeah.
Are we still going to make a new top-level page table?
Question is, are we still going to make a new top-level page table? So this is something I glossed over. The simplest thing to do is we just make a new whole new set of page tables, because we know we're eventually going to need to make modifications. Now, we could try to be really clever and share second-level page tables. And maybe some OSs do that, but it's probably not worthwhile. Yeah?
This is actually about the exercise. You might have answered it, but does when you write that first statement that said that it initialized the array and had the size of the array, does that
So the question is, on our array example, does this ever initialize the array? So the rule in C and C++ is that if it's at global scope, it's initialized to zero. Otherwise, who knows? The compiler can do whatever it likes. And there might be a way you can make the compiler be kind and actually initialize it for you. But there's no guarantee if it's a local variable like this. Are there questions about this, our copy and write scenario? Okay, so given that, let's say I have a program, and this is its memory layout. So we have, these are whole pages that are set up in this particular way, or in some cases, sets of pages. Let's say this process calls fork and modifies 128 bytes on its heap and an 8-byte variable on a stack. How many physical pages do we have allocated after that? And let's say, how many physical pages must be allocated, let's say, in total. So what's the total after we fork and do these writes? Okay, who would like more time? Okay. Who would like some more time? Is she? Yes. Okay, so start out for figuring out this problem. I like to figure out, well, how much is allocated before we fork? And that we have here, this is two pages of code because remember the last 12 bits, so four hex digits are our page offset with 4K pages. So that's virtual page 1 to 2. Inclusive is code, so that's two pages of code, one page of global variables, two pages of heap, and one page of stack. Everything else is inaccessible. We don't need to allocate memory for stuff which is inaccessible. So we have six pages to start out with. And then we modify a 128-byte heap array. And remember, we can only allocate whole pages at a time from the OS's point of view. And we have to allocate a new page when we want to make a copy of part of the program's memory. So the best case is that we copy a whole 4K page just to have a place for the child to store its modified 128 bytes. So this would be plus one page. Now we could get unlucky, and the array could have be split between two pages. So here's our heap. This is the top of heap, heap, the bottom of heap, and the heap is two pages. It could be the case that the array is allocated right here, in which case we'd have to do two pages. So this is one page or two if unlucky. Then we have to modify an 8-byte variable on the stack. And to do that, we're going to have to copy the whole page containing that variable. We know there's only one, so that's going to be another plus one page. So our total, after doing that copying, is we have eight pages allocated, at least, and maybe nine. So, or nine if unlucky. Okay, so questions? Yeah. The question is, wouldn't the compiler prevent that? Its question is whether malloc prevents that, and probably. Yes. Two questions, do we have to handle global variables? We did, because they were included in the six I started out with. And we didn't change them, so after copy and write, after making everything read-only, they're still readable. Okay. So next time, I will do midterm review for our midterm, which is a week from today. I might also start by finishing this up a little bit. That's what's coming up. If you don't have questions that you want me to review, I won't talk about anything. I'll just leave. So please come with questions.